The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, gamble wisely, folks. Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day. And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Friday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined by the guy that every girl goes crazy for. Yeah, the sharp-dressed man, the professor, Dave Malinsky.
They go crazy for the wrong reasons, of course. Coming up today, we're going to brilliantly break down the battle in Bama, talk about the Boulder blackout for the Buffs, and once we get all those killer bees out of the room, tell you how one NFL team is going to be forced to bring a skeleton out of their closet.
I like the tongue twisters there, Dave, but forgetting about tongue twisters and killer bees for just a moment, let's start with the first take from what you saw and what you did on Thursday.
It's going to be what we did this week. A good friend in town, Gabriel Morenci. And if you're watching us, you know, on a laptop, if you're in the podcast world, odds are you've seen him, listened to him, and enjoyed what he's done through the years. Gabriel and I go way back to when he was doing radio in Montreal, even met him up there many, many, many years ago. Someone we've had an awful lot of fun with through time. And we taped a little segment out of the Barrymore earlier this week, the official restaurant of Vegas Sports Day. I'm trying to get a parking place at the hotel, caught by them. Segment turned out pretty well, but what I'm hearing now is maybe even bigger news. For football fans in Las Vegas on Saturday night, there could be an appearance out at Sam Boyd Stadium of Teddy Covers and Gabriel Morenci. Now, you know what Teddy looks like. You can go to Gabe's website, see what he looks like. When you see them, these are two of the most generous people I've ever been around.
Uh-oh.
So before you buy any drinks, go to them first and say, guys, we're big fans of yours. How about a round on the house? They're also pretty generous with food, although at that particular facility, food can be a little dubious. But say hi to them, shake hands with them, get a couple of drinks bought while you're at it. And even in the second half, when it's hot chocolate time, and it looks like it probably will be, it's going to dip into the 40s, they'll still be there. Teddy, sorry I can't be with you guys tomorrow. I'm with you today. What's on your mind out of the Thursday results?
Well, first of all, we got to talk about the second half of tomorrow night's UNLV game, because if the score is what I think it's going to be by halftime of that ball game, not convinced that Kara and I, or Morenci for that matter, will be sticking around too long post-halftime. So if you want those drinks, you better find us early. When it comes to yesterday, I got a rant here, Dave. Come on. We have an over in the UCF-Tulsa game. We're right there. It's 24-17. UCF first and goal inside the five-yard line, 5 minutes remaining. And what do they do? Here's a team that can't throw the football. Not a good passing team. I know they got down to the goal line with the big pass play, but bottom line, UCF, the Knights, are a run-first football team. So they get to the goal line. First down, they run, and they get stuffed. So what happens? Oh, they get all scared. Oh, we can't run the ball. They pass on second down, pass on third down, pass on fourth down. Incomplete, incomplete, incomplete. Or they got stuffed, actually. Godfrey got sacked on second. But the bottom line is pass play, pass play, pass play, game over. And then, of course, they can't get a stop to try to get the ball back. First and goal inside the five in your home field. Run the ball down their throats. Why couldn't they do that? I still don't know why they couldn't do that. A play calling sequence that really baffled me last night. All right, enough with that. Let's go to Market Watch. And, of course, from Market Watch today, there's so many good games we have to preview on Friday's show. Market Watch, we got to talk about the biggest one of them all. That's Alabama versus LSU. Crimson Tide, 5-point home chalk, total 41. Let's debate this one, Dave. I got a hunch you and I are going to be on different sides of the Alabama-LSU matchup.
If somebody will bet Alabama for us and get it up to 6, we will be on different sides. Otherwise, I will have just a gentle rooting interest, but no financial investment. Plus six is my take number with LSU in this game. And we made a couple of references to this one already on the show during the week, talking about different aspects that come into play. One of them being the series head-to-head in the 4 years that it's been Les Miles against Nick Saban. Awfully close games. No one's been able to win in double figures. Points just about even over those 4 years. That's also the careers of the fifth-year seniors. And also on an Inside of the Number segment, we talked about when an undefeated team is playing another unbeaten this late in the year, how the underdog has been a good percentage play. Tells you that you don't get unbeaten teams plus points very often. I don't see much gap between these teams from a physical standpoint. In fact, last year, LSU ran and passed for over 200 yards against Alabama. That's rare to do against that class of defense. So my first thought is pretty even teams. A level of athlete at LSU that's not going to be bothered by a home field. Sometimes the A-level players actually get more inspired and play even better in front of a hostile crowd. Teddy, I'm looking at the points.
Yeah, I'm sure you are, because that's why you're going to lose this game, because you're looking at the wrong side. When it comes to Alabama and LSU, again, you're going to look at the numbers and look at the hard stats, say there's no difference between these two teams. You're going to look at the long-term trends and say, oh, you got to take the points in these undefeated versus undefeated matchups. But I subscribe to a little bit of a different theory here, and there's a statistical metric that I like to use. I call it AccuStats, and it's not something that's really publicly available, so I almost hate to talk about it on air. But a friend of mine compiles these numbers, and what it does, it takes out all the garbage numbers, takes out all the bad punt snaps that go over someone's head and count for a negative 40 yards in terms of rushing. It takes out all the sack numbers and puts those into the passing categories. And it gives you a much more accurate read of the true statistical profiles of the two teams. And guess what? Alabama, with dramatic edges, better than 1 yard per play in three of the four stats. Of course, there's running yards per play, passing yards per play, run defense yards per play, and pass defensive yards per play. In three of those four categories, Alabama is a full yard per play better than LSU so far this season. I know that hasn't showed up on the scoreboards necessarily. LSU's been winning all these games by margin. I think that the Crimson Tide are the better of these two teams. And if I'm playing, I'm laying. Your buy number is six. My buy number is minus four. If I see a four on Alabama, I will absolutely pull the trigger. And total-wise, 41, with all the athletes on these teams can score on offense, they can score on defense, they can score on special teams. No way I'm playing the under here. It's favorite and or over, the only way I would consider.
There's one interesting caution when you break the numbers down the way Teddy did. And we know a lot of people do that, and there's a lot of merit to it because it takes away what seem to be lucky bounces that teams get. LSU, it's a little bit different in that what are lucky bounces sometimes are the fact that they just simply don't give anything away. LSU all season has turned the ball over three times. Their last turnover, September 15th, more than a month and a half ago. They know the defense is awfully good, that you run a very low-risk offense. You're not going to see a lot of option plays. Every once in a while, with Jefferson at quarterback, there'll be something resembling an option. No, this is a low-risk offense. So it's not that LSU necessarily gets a lot of good bounces. They don't give away the bad ones. Now, countering that, though, is the fact that Alabama is almost the same way. The last seven Alabama games, only three turnovers. It's usually we like over 41 with these type of athletes because the defenses can score, the special teams can score. Here's the problem. These are two of the most low-risk offenses in all of college football, and I think that's the way they start this game out. Slug them out at the beginning. Try to not give anything away. That doesn't give me the tempo I want at a 41, but it's still tempting to try that for a little bit.
Low-risk offenses. I'll give you a low-risk offense. LSU, zero turnovers since, what'd you say, September 15th? I'll take the over zero for LSU turnovers in this game, and I'll take it for the limit. In fact, I'll take the over one. I might even take over two here. I think LSU is going to match or exceed their season high in turnovers just in this ballgame. Their season total, not their season high, just in this ballgame. At least, you know, if we're going to say something bold, let's say something bold. LSU matches or exceeds their turnover total for the whole season against Alabama, because this time they're going to be playing from behind. Hey, guys, we love those questions. We really appreciate the time that you're taking to send the emails in every day in the forum post as well. In fact, we're going to answer them in our next segment on Friday. But please keep those emails coming in, sportsday@covers.com. We're answering as many as we can on air every day. Again, sportsday@covers.com. The toll-free listener rant line, 866 866-4599. And, of course, get involved with the Covers.com community. Active threads and discussions going right now. Covers.com in the forums. When we come back, we're going to go inside the numbers, and we're going to answer those viewer questions.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
Hi, I'm Chris Phillips from Talk Tales, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And if you stop by the studio, our producer Scott's going to buy everybody a drink.
Before we go inside the numbers, let's answer some viewer emails. We're going to start with a great email we got from Bill in Syracuse. Bill, really enjoying the show so far. Thank you, Bill. I appreciate that. We're really enjoying doing it for you every day. But the next part of the email, of course, is the question. How early in the season do you begin factoring weather into your handicaps? Does it matter more for totals and sides? And what about the difference between college and the NFL?
Truth is, you start from day one anytime there's going to be something substantial, but it doesn't happen a lot in September or October. Had a few windy days, you know, on the plains. That's been about it. But when we get into November, you want to make a habit every week of taking a look at the weather first. And it's not that difficult. Since we know most of you are watching online, there are so many different places where you can get that national weather chart for the weekend. Give you an idea where there might be some precipitation, where it might be cold. A couple of things come into play. One is it tends to impact totals a little bit more than sides because it can impact game pace, particularly wind. Precipitation, not so much. Wind, a major factor. We're going to talk about a game being played in Wyoming in a couple of minutes where that is going to be a factor on Saturday. But a big difference between college and the pros. If anything, in the NFL, where almost everyone has field turf now, and note that field turf does not get impacted by the weather very much. These fields drain awfully well. They play the same pacing as grass does, but they drain well. College, you still have a lot of natural grass where they can get sloppy, but the NFL players sometimes have an advantage to the over in bad weather. You've got a lot of teams that will pass the ball more, try to force the defenders when the footing is bad to have to make some difficult cuts and difficult reactions. So a big difference between college and the NFL in that regard. Each week from here on out on Friday, we'll be isolating weather spots and telling you how we're best going to deal with it. Next one comes from Shiva7 from the Vegas Video Network website. I guess it's the website. I don't know. Maybe they just slipped it under the door over here. It says, love your podcast. This week the Packers are coming off a bye week, and the Chargers played a Monday night divisional matchup on the road. The schedule makers have seemingly given the Packers a significant scheduling advantage with the extra rest. Do you have any ATS records for this scenario, and how much of an advantage will this give the Packers?
Well, first of all, anytime you say great podcast or we love the podcast, you know, the letter goes to the front of the line, so keep those emails coming. Thank you. We're going to break this game down fully in our NFL Money Time segment later in the show, but just briefly here, I want to touch on the concept here of small sample size. You're talking about the situation exactly where a team is coming off a Monday night football road game facing an opponent that's coming off a bye. And to be honest, the sample size for that is not very large, so you don't want to make any broad generalizations about how that's going to play out based on what is a relatively short sample size. It is also worth noting that Green Bay may be a little fat and happy going into the bye off the perfect start to the season, while the Chargers certainly in a circle the wagons mode after back-to-back road losses. And speaking of circle the wagons mode, we've got a question from Kush J. And Kush, I still want to know about that bubble butt for your avatar, man. Real or not real? Come on. Next time you post a question, this is your last one that goes on air before we find out the truth about that avatar, because if that's real, whatever. We want to meet her. Bottom line, okay? Kush J wants to know, can the Redskins put up 10 against the 49ers? I don't think they can. That they'll be able to run the football. Circle the wagons for the Washington Redskins, Mr. Malinsky? Or is this a spot that the Redskins are just out of gas?
You try to circle the wagons, there just isn't anything in those wagons right now. Last week's show, we talked about how depleted they were on offense. You've got five key cogs of that offense missing right now. So they go out and they sign Tashard Choice to come in and play running back. He's not going to play Sunday anyway. He's injured. They just don't have the pieces. So if you look at how badly they struggled against a bad Buffalo defense, the door is open for San Francisco to put a clampdown game there. And you're touching upon something good when you talk about Washington scoring 10. You don't have to look at San Francisco laying 3.5. Maybe you look at a 3 if you find one. You don't have to look at the total. But with the betting boards out there the way they are, you can probably find a Washington team total that could provide you with some good value come Sunday.
Absolutely. Of course, that's a big part of the derivatives marketplace. We talk about betting sides. We talk about betting totals. That's only one piece of the equation for any serious professional bettor. Team totals, definitely part of that derivatives marketplace, gives you a chance to go against the Redskins without going nuts. All right, time to go inside the numbers, Dave, and your crack research staff, not research staff that's on crack. They're a crack staff. What did they come up with for this weekend edition?
Not actually sure you were wrong the first time. That's why we don't put those guys on camera. But we put their work on camera. One of the things you should be doing in the NFL, and probably aren't, is breaking down subcategories of division and non-division opponents. Might sound a little bit obvious for some reasons, but here's the missing element that comes into play a lot. When you're playing teams twice a year, every year, there's a degree of familiarity that comes into play. The game planning is entirely different. There are certain coaches we love in the once a years because we know they're going to out-game plan a guy that hasn't faced them before. But now you're talking about coach versus coach, like this week, Sean Payton and Raheem Morris in the New Orleans-Tampa Bay matchup. Here's what's interesting. Both of these coaches have particular patterns in division play that certainly shows when they go head-to-head, and it's something you might not expect. So when we go inside the numbers for Friday, let's take a look at these division games. Now, this is going to be the career of Morris and then Payton in the same framework. This is the last three seasons. New Orleans, 11-3 to the under in division games. Tampa Bay, 10-4 to the under in division games. And look at what happens when these two coaches have gone head-to-head. A perfect 5-0 to the under. Telling you that this might not be the last time on today's show that we talk about these coaches and the nuances of this matchup.
Oh, you love those teases, Dave. And here's a tease for you coming up. We're going to break down the news you need to know in our Insider Six-Pack.
I'm Courtney Leone. This is Vegas Video Network. You want me to mention awkward silence? Let's do that then. Okay. Never been on set here before. I'm always out live on location for Awkward Silence 2.1. I'm Courtney Leone, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. Good, better, good.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
All right, let's open up that six chunks of knowledge from... I'm sorry, the spittle's coming out again. Six chunks of knowledge for the weekend's football card, and we're going to start right here in Las Vegas with the UNLV Running Rebels. Head coach Bobby Hawk in a bit of a quandary this week. He was forced to suspend five players prior to Boise State this Saturday. And a couple of starters included in that group. Tim Cornett, the leading rusher, 367 yards, four touchdowns so far on the season, 5.5 yards per carry, which is real good for a UNLV team that struggled to run the football for extended stretches this season. Also, linebacker Tani Maka tied for the team lead in tackles, along with the linebacker Princeton Jackson, number two on the depth chart. So some pretty key pieces out of the equation for UNLV against Boise. I don't know if Hawk is saying, all right, let's get the suspensions out of the way this week when we're 41 or 42-point underdogs. But it does give the young freshman running back, and this guy's impressed me the last couple of weeks, Deonza Bradford, back-to-back big games for the Rebels. He'll get his chance against a top-notch defense this week. Obviously, a little bit of a difference between playing Colorado State a week ago and Boise State this time around. Off the back-to-back 100-yard games, Bradford is going to need to be able to move the chains if the Rebels are going to do anything but get blown out in that ballgame.
And remember, folks, if you're at that game, you know what Teddy looks like. You can look up Gabriel online. Beer's on them. And also, you know, Teddy just became a father a couple of months ago. Loves children. If you've got kids, he'll buy hot dogs for all of them. So just line them up. You might be able to eat for free at the UNLV game, courtesy of our friend. You want free tickets to another game tomorrow, TCU Wyoming? Grab a shovel. Interesting promotion put up by the University of Wyoming. Sign up, bring a shovel, help them shovel out the stadium because they got barraged with snow this week. You get a free ticket in exchange. Now, how will that impact the game on Saturday? Still precipitation in Laramie today, but it's going to get a little bit warmer tomorrow. That snow looks like it's going to change the rain. Temperatures are going to be like in the mid-40s when this game kicks off. It's almost easier to project the game in snow where the field would just be frozen but might not impact the footing as much as cold rain, which makes things very, very sloppy. It's tough to throw the ball, tough for the receivers to keep their hands dry, and that footing could be very, very choppy. One of the things we look for at times when we have a big favorite on a sloppy field, the shutdown second half. TCU certainly have a mindset to do that. If they've got a big lead in the third quarter, they start working the clock because they got Boise State next week. So I don't know if we want to do a full game total or watch the way the field plays out in the first half and then be ready at halftime to maybe look at a second half under.
Wyoming, of course, was shut out by TCU last year, and I believe they scored only a touchdown against the Horned Frogs the previous season. The total in that game, by the way, dropping like a rock as we speak. Let's talk about the New York Giants here for a minute and a key injury that's been bandied about all across the internet over the course of the last 24 hours. That, of course, being running back Ahmad Bradshaw, who's been huge for the G-men this season. 440 rushing yards, 5 touchdowns, 24 receptions, and a TD catching passes out of the backfield. And Bradshaw has been, without a doubt, the Giants' best threat on the ground so far this season. We saw yesterday a beat writer for the team get the ball rolling with a report that Bradshaw had suffered a cracked bone in his foot and would be needing surgery that would have him out for several weeks. But the Giants tried to put that to rest and say, no. Bradshaw doesn't need surgery, and he hasn't been ruled out of Sunday's game against New England. So we're not going to know until the hour before kickoff. This is going to be a game-time decision for Bradshaw. If he doesn't play, of course, Brandon Jacobs, who's been a major disappointment for the G-men all season long, will get his chance to, bounce back, improve on what the crappy season he's already had. Call it what you will. Jacobs will get his opportunity should Bradshaw be unable to go.
One guy who's been having a terrific season is Dallas linebacker Sean Lee, playing at a Pro Bowl level, an excellent fit for those Rob Ryan packages. We may not see him this week. He's got a dislocated wrist. Early reports this week that he might need surgery that would put him out for the season. Cowboys say, no, we're in playoff contention. Let's see if we can fit a cast on him and get him on the field. They probably will not play him against Seattle on Sunday, but he has been fitted with a cast. Try to gut it out and have the surgery later. Big reason for that, they don't have a replacement. Our rookie Bruce Carter isn't ready yet. If you watched how bad that defense was exploited against Philadelphia on Sunday night, the other backups, Brady James, Keith Brooking, two long-in-the-tooth veterans, have a little bit of savvy to fill in, but they're just not the athletes to blitz the way Ryan wants his linebackers to be playing right now.
Let's talk about the Monday night game. And, of course, we're going to break down Bears-Eagles fully. On Monday, it's a big part of every Monday show. We break down the Monday Night Football game in Money Time. But for you fantasy players out there, certainly for you guys who are looking to bet some of the props, let's clear something up right now that caused a little market reaction during the course of the week. And that's LeSean McCoy and his injury. Will he play? Won't he play for Philadelphia? McCoy was sent home from practice on Thursday with a bout of stomach flu, but he's expected to be back on the field today. And it looks like LeSean McCoy is going to be fine for Monday night's tilt against the Bears. And, of course, with the way that the Eagles have been running the football this season, the number one rush offense in the NFL, McCoy being healthy is obviously going to be a big factor in their game plan. It's worth noting that backup running back Deion Lewis, not available last week because of a wrist injury. Well, he split the snaps with Ronnie Brown yesterday during McCoy's absence in practice. So Philadelphia should be fully healthy with all hands on deck at running back for the Monday night affair.
Not fully healthy on Sunday. The quarterbacks for Arizona and St. Louis. Right now, it looks like neither starter is going to go. Sam Bradford did practice a little bit for the Rams yesterday. You won't see that. On their official report, it says did not participate. That was sort of the Rams working around the rules a little bit. Bradford participated in the 7-on-7 drills, but not the full team drills. If you're not in the full team drills, then you don't have to declare it. It was sort of their way of keeping Arizona guessing. We hear this morning, though, Bradford likely to sit out one more week. As San Francisco establishes so much breathing room in that division, you don't force him out there this season unless you really have to. For the Cardinals, looking like Kevin Cobb, who hasn't practiced yet this week, is going to be a no-go. Project John Skelton as the starter for the Cardinals this week. He started the last four games of the regular season last year. Not terribly impressive, only 47.6% completions and only two touchdown passes in 126 attempts. Not going to see very dynamic quarterback play for either team in this one. Also, one other small note, you know, Beanie Wells was out of practice last week, played through pain on Sunday. It might give you the idea that because of his numbers, he's good to go this week. Said actually that's not the case. Because he played through that injury, he still hasn't healed properly. We may not see Wells at 100% either.
Yeah, and I like the way you phrase that, Dave, that John Skelter was not so good last year. Say it how it was. Skelter plays like Skeletor. He stinks. If Arizona goes on the field on Sunday, they're in trouble to win the game straight up, let alone cover the spread. And we're going to talk about all these games. We're going to put all this news to work for you. Coming up, Money Time.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Okay, guys, it's Money Time! And this segment sponsored by Covers.com for anything involving point spreads. Covers covers the numbers. Let's go to Iowa City right now. The Michigan Wolverines, 3.5-point road chalk, total of 58 against the disappointing Iowa Hawkeyes, who made me mad last week. Dave, do we take revenge on Iowa going against them here? Or is this a spot that the Hawkeyes bounce back as home underdogs?
We don't do a postmortem on Friday because we got a couple of Money Time segments, just too many games to go through. If we did, this would be a good example of one we could have set up for you. Look at these last two meetings between these teams, and I think it has a lot of relevance going forward. Michigan wins the last 2 years by 8 first downs and 101 yards on the field, but they lose by 12 points on the scoreboard. That's a huge disconnect. That's almost a 3 or 4 touchdown gap between what you think would have happened and what the final score was. Reason for that, look at the turnovers. 9 for Michigan, 1 for Iowa. That was a much less disciplined Michigan team playing under Rich Rodriguez. Now we see a better focus under Brady Hoke and maybe something that can be exploited here. Michigan's going to be very fresh. 2 weeks ago they had a bye. Last week they had a walkover against Purdue. When we get to November and we have fresh teams going into a soft rushing defense, we like those matchups. Maybe those bounces even out. And of course, part of the reason, Teddy, why Iowa struggled so much, that rush defense wearing down, Minnesota had their season high in rushing. Not a good sign.
No, not at all. I mean, Iowa had so many chances in that ballgame. They could have blown it open in the first half against the Gophers. I believe they were in Minnesota territory on each of their first 5 drives and came away with a grand total of 3 points on those 5 drives, just not taking advantage of opportunities. And then, of course, when things turned in the fourth quarter, they really turned on one play. It was a 4th-and-1 sneak by Marquis Gray, the Gophers' quarterback. The Hawkeyes couldn't get the stop, ended up giving a touchdown on that drive, ended up letting Minnesota recover the onside kick, and then a touchdown on the next drive. And Iowa, even with time against a bottom-tier defense, the pass game wasn't there. The energy wasn't there. And that was my biggest concern, because that's a huge rivalry game for this Iowa team. When the energy's not there for the rivalry games, what's the energy going to be like against a team playing with revenge and playing better defense than any of us expected? Michigan, to me, is the only choice that I can make in this one. I do not trust the Hawkeyes. Last week's game stands out like a sore thumb, the type of game Iowa was supposed to win, but frankly, wasn't good enough or strong enough to do it.
We'll talk about that strength a little bit, and part of why we expect the turnovers to maybe even out, bad rush defenses and turnovers have a little bit of a correlation. When you can't stop the run, it means you don't have the other side in second and nine or third and 10 very often. In Big Ten play this year, 302 snaps against Iowa, only four takeaways. They're not putting teams in the right down and distance situations. Let's go to Norman, Oklahoma, where we've got Oklahoma, a 13.5 point favorite, 68.5 over what's been a disappointing Texas A&M team to much of the marketplace. A lot of people thought the Aggies were going to be a BCS contender at the start. They now have three losses already. Was this a case of A&M being a disappointment, or were the markets simply wrong?
Well, A&M's been right there in all their losses. You know, they had these big halftime leads. They led against Arkansas at halftime. They led against Oklahoma State at halftime. They led against Missouri at halftime. And all of those comfortable halftime leads. So what happened in the second half of those three losses for A&M, their only three losses of the season? Well, real simple. They got outscored 80-15 after halftime. What does that tell us? Well, it tells us two things. Number one is that the offense doesn't move the football quite as well in pressure situations. And number two, it tells us that this defense tends to wear down against class competition. When you have a defense that tends to wear down against class, boy, Norman, Oklahoma can be a very, very ugly place to play, particularly we're talking about an Oklahoma team that's going to remember very well what happened in College Station last year, where they three times inside the 10-yard line, three times came away without a touchdown, ended up losing by two TDs to the Aggies on Texas A&M's own home field.
Yeah, when you see a team get worn down as badly as A&M does in the second half, it means you're just not good enough yet. You can't say, well, if we got this bounce, if we got that bounce. Now, those defeats were so pronounced. And look at the total tallies defensively for those three games. 103 points, 86 first downs, 1,547 yards. Now, if depth is a problem and Oklahoma has revenge, think about what could happen here. Oklahoma at home averaging 88.3 offensive snaps per game. That taxes that depth. That means we see your weakness. We're going to speed this game up to get as many plays in as possible. And oh, by the way, because of what you did to us last year, if we're up 20 in the second half, we want to be up 27 on the next possession. Oklahoma at anything under 14 might be a nice fit for your pockets.
Let's go to Pittsburgh right now, where the Cincinnati Bearcats, in one of the more disappointing line moves, I got to say, up to 3.5, over under 54 against the Pitt Panthers this coming Saturday. And I absolutely had Cincinnati on the short list for the clients this week. Loved them at 2.5, not so much at 3.5. Obviously, that line moving yesterday, and now the marketplace telling us, hey, we do respect the Cincinnati team, and I can understand why. Cincinnati has been the class of the conference. And yeah, I'm not going to mix up the Big East and the ACC again today like I did yesterday. Since the class of the Big East, even more so than the ultra-hyped West Virginia so far this season.
Big reason for that line move and something we talked about on the show, the absence of Ray Graham, who's just been having a terrific season at running back for Pitt. But is his absence going to be that pronounced? And I think here becomes the big conundrum here. Replacing him, Zach Brown, who you probably haven't noticed much this season until last Wednesday night against Connecticut, but you would have remembered from his time at Wisconsin. Why is Zach Brown here? He fell to third string at Wisconsin in spring practice and didn't think he was going to get much playing time. But because he's already graduated from the University of Wisconsin, he becomes one of those college football free agents that we've seen floating around, like Russell Wilson at Wisconsin this year. You've got a Pitt assistant coach who was formerly at Wisconsin, had a little bit of a connection. Look, come down here and play, have your final season with us. We're going to throw the ball a little bit more, and he's a good receiver out of the backfield. He caught 9 passes in that Connecticut game. So have the markets perhaps overreacted a little bit? When you cross a 3, it takes a lot of money to do that. Could a case be made that maybe the gap from Graham to Brown isn't all that major now that Brown's had a full week and a half as the first teamer in practice?
And this is a great example of the inefficiencies of the betting marketplace. Ray Graham being out, this is no surprise. This is nothing new. If you watch this show, you knew about it early in the week. And if you wanted to bet it, you could have bet it early in the week. And yet it took until Thursday for the bettors to say, oh, well, this 2.5 is too low. Let's pound up to 3.5 because Graham's not going to play. In my mind, this is a quarterback mismatch. And there's a QB on the Cincinnati Bearcats line that I love, a guy who's made me money, certainly 2 years ago in a backup role, and this year throughout the course of the season. We had the Cincy catch with him at South Florida a couple of weeks ago, and we had a Zach Collaros drive to close out that ball game. where Cincinnati, they missed an extra point that made me freaking crazy in that game. But even after the missed XP that made a three-point deficit into a four-point deficit, Kolaros, clock winding down, drives the Bearcats right down the field into the end zone with the game-winning touchdown pass. I give him a big edge over his counterpart on the other sideline, Tino Sinceri, who's really struggled for extended stretches so far this season.
Let's go to Boulder, Colorado. Blackout night for the Buffaloes in Boulder. Southern Cal, 21-point favorite. You might think that a team having as bad a season as Colorado's having, when they call for a blackout night for all the students and fans to wear black, isn't going to get much to happen. No, they are here. This is probably the biggest game scheduled on their calendar for the opening of the Pac-10 season. They saw this from the beginning. Friday night, Southern Cal comes to town. Let's sell this thing out. May not be a full sellout in terms of attendance, but don't be surprised there's a much more passionate crowd than you would expect for a team that's played as poorly as they have. Big reason, though, for those Colorado performances, the two best players, not only in the offense, but on the team, running back Ronnie Stewart, wide receiver Paul Richardson, they're both coming back tonight. They've been out for quite some time. That's a dynamic combination to put around with Tyler Hansen. Don't be surprised if Colorado plays a lot harder tonight than a team with their record and their stats might appear to on paper.
Yeah, I mean, the Buffs are still looking for their first Pac-12 win. So it's obviously going to be a huge game for them. And we've seen them play with passion and fire on this field before. I remember specifically the overtime loss against Cal where the Buffs, they were coming with steam out of their ears in that ballgame. I guess that's not a real good steam out of your ears, hand gesture. But you understand what I'm trying to say. I mean, they played their guts out in that ballgame, and I think we may see similar effort in tonight's ballgame. We talked earlier in the week, we did a little postmortem on the USC Trojans, talked about how this might be something of a flat spot for USC, coming off the back-to-back huge games, the win over Notre Dame and the triple overtime loss against Stanford. Now they got to travel, they got to play in altitude, and oh, they're a little bit banged up. Four freshmen starting for Lane Kiffin's squad this evening on the defensive side of the football, and that could well be an issue as the game progresses.
So let's push this one to the top. Jacob, let's see that helmet. Let's go Colorado as this week's NCAA play of the day. Look for Colorado to play with a lot more confidence with their key cogs back on offense, also getting healthier on defense. And when you're talking about a spread nearing three touchdowns, sometimes it's just a matter of effort. Southern Cal will play hard enough to win the game, but there's no particular incentive for them to do much more than that. Look for Colorado to play Southern Cal dead even for long stretches tonight and comfortably stay within that spread.
That's the Buffs as our play of the day and the college side. But when we come back, we're going to break down the NFL. It's Money Time Part 2.
Oh, hello there. My name is Brandon Gooch Hahn, host of Awkward Silence 2.1. And when I'm not living vicariously through Chris Phillips, I'm on VegasVideoNetwork.com.
And this Money Time segment sponsored by Covers.com. For anything and everything to do with point spreads, anything to do with the point spread, covers the number. Now, Money Time action, NFL style, and we're going to start in Foxborough, New England, where right now the New England Patriots -9, total of 51, a Super Bowl rematch between the Patriots and the Giants. Well, I would think the Patriots have already forgotten about that Super Bowl loss. I know their fans haven't, but the guys in the field are supposed to forget about that, 3 years later, don't you think?
Bill Belichick never forgets about a loss because he doesn't have many. He could probably sit there and recount everyone over the last decade. Now, earlier this week, we focused on an Inside the Number segment on Belichick and how he does after a loss. Fantastic numbers, 21-3 straight up, 19-5 against the spread, beating the spread by over 11 points a game in the process. Does that apply anymore? That's our question this week. Is this New England defense, which allows more yards per play than any team in the NFL, simply so limited that coaching doesn't matter? You can only X and O so much if the players aren't capable of delivering. So think about a couple of elements we have here. The Giants give up one full yard less per play than the Patriots. You don't get a +9 with that kind of defensive gap very often. But now a new category. For years, we used to talk about 4x4s in the running game, We used to like that team that ran for over 4 yards per carry against a team that gives up over 4. You can understand why it works. What you do best goes into a weakness. How about an 8x8 in the passing game? These are awfully, awfully rare. Eli Manning and the Giants getting 8.8 yards per pass attempt this year. The Patriots giving up 8.3. How do you get a 9 out of that? Yeah, because not only does it mean you've got a tough time controlling the game to build a lead, but if it's an 8x8, how do you protect the lead? That back door can be wide open. If you take the Giants and you fall down by 14, that's not that horrible. Your passing game into their pass defense can get you back under the spread.
Of course, the Giants' biggest weakness of their own this season has been their own pass defense. So, I mean, New England was on my short list this week. But frankly, Dave, after you talk about those defensive numbers, and we've looked at them long and hard throughout the course of the week, I just simply couldn't get to the betting window laying more than a touchdown with this Pat squad against a G-men team that, as you mentioned, has the potential to come in through the back door. So where does that leave us? Maybe we can take a look at the total in this one. Weather conditions supposed to be reasonable. Again, every week, November, December, you want to check those weather conditions and make sure you're not trying to bet totals over 50 in conditions where the weather is, you know, 20 degrees and freezing rain and all that kind of stuff. Reasonable weather expected in Foxborough, and two offenses that can absolutely light up opposing Ds with their passing games, and two defenses that can't stop the pass. That's one that, in theory, makes sense for me this coming Sunday.
Let's head out to San Diego, where the Packers are 5.5, total of 51. We had some reference earlier in the show about does this situation help Green Bay that much, and it's kind of a fascinating one. If you're the Packers, did you necessarily want that bye week? This offense was clicking at 9.9 yards per pass attempt. To put that in perspective, let's look at the next three on the list. Tom Brady in New England, Ben Roethlisberger in Pittsburgh, Drew Brees in New Orleans. None of them are even within a yard of the Packers. In fact, Drew Brees, 8.0, almost 2 full yards less per attempt than Green Bay. When you're in that kind of rhythm, don't you want to just keep playing?
Yeah, probably so. And when we talk about the San Diego side of the equation right here, I mean, this is a Chargers team off back-to-back losses, mistake-filled second-half losses, on the road against the Jets and the Chiefs. It's a Chargers team that still thinks of themselves as Super Bowl contenders, division winners, that type of squad. They do have a huge game on tap next week, early in the week, against the Oakland Raiders. That's not the, I believe this is a Thursday night game. But for San Diego, it's a back-to-the-wall type of ballgame. If the Chargers are going to stay alive this season and be legitimate contenders, this is a game we would expect them to step up against. And when we talk about the success that Green Bay has had so far in 2011, well, it's come despite some legitimate weakness in the secondary. Opposing teams have thrown the ball consistently well against the Packers. When Dom Capers' blitzes haven't rattled the opposing QB, the secondary's been limited in their ability to make stops. They made a lot of big plays, but not a lot of stops. And, of course, a number of the key elements from that Packers secondary, guys like Tremont Williams, Charles Woodson, Clay Matthews, Morgan Burnett, all in the back seven defensively for Green Bay. They all were battling minor injuries, all four with a little bit of extra time to get healthy for this one.
Let's clean up one of the issues we talked about with the Chargers earlier this week. That running back situation, not very good. Ryan Matthews looks like a no-go. Curtis Brinkley, who played well on Monday, won't know till Sunday. He has to pass the NFL official concussion test, see if he's going to be able to go. Mike Tolbert is healthy. He's going to be back on the field. The problem is Tolbert's been battling a hamstring injury. Those can tweak again pretty quickly. If Tolbert goes down, there's just nobody else there but Jacob Hester, who's really a fullback. That makes it a little bit dicey to get behind San Diego. If we see plus sixes on Sunday, it'll be tempting, but that running back situation probably keeps us away.
Let's go to Sunday night in Pittsburgh between two teams that are really sick of each other. The fifth meeting in the last 13 months between the Ravens and the Steelers. Right now, Pittsburgh -3, total of 42. But this line has the potential, at least, to tick up a notch between now and kickoff. If you like the Steelers, I wouldn't wait. I'd get the threes now while they're definitely still available.
One guy who's really sick of this, of course, is Ben Roethlisberger. One of the toughest games of his career, opening day in Baltimore, a 35-7 drubbing. Roethlisberger sacked 4 times, threw 3 interceptions, never got into any type of rhythm at all. So you can expect a level of pride from the Pittsburgh offense in the rematch. Question is the Pittsburgh defense. We talked about their linebacker injuries during the week. At this point, we don't know who's going to be out there. Lamar Woodley, they were trying to say, would be out for 2 weeks. Slight chance he may play. James Harrison practicing again. Chance he may play. Or instead of that 3-4, we might even see Pittsburgh in some 4-3 defensive alignments on Sunday. That's where there's a little bit of a mystery for a struggling Baltimore offensive line. That 4-3 might be an interesting way to keep them out of rhythm.
Yeah, you talk about that struggling Ravens offensive line. They were blown off the ball in the Monday night game against Jacksonville. Again, another night game on the road against a solid defense. And the Ravens really couldn't do anything offensively in that ball game. And for extended stretches last week against Arizona, they trailed by 3 touchdowns in that ballgame against the Cardinals before rallying to win. And they really rallied to win in large part. There were a couple of key pass interference penalties against Anquan Boldin. It was one guy. You know, it was the defense getting some stops and then Boldin making some plays downfield. But the bottom line is that it's been a spotty Ravens offense in recent weeks. And that Steelers offense, they're starting to score points in bunches.
Let's go to the Superdome in New Orleans. New Orleans right now sitting at -8 and a 50.5 over Tampa Bay. And, of course, the first thing that's going to jump out at you is after today's Inside the Numbers graphic, doesn't 50.5 look high? Well, in that graphic, we told you that it was a 5-0 run to the under in games between Morris and Peyton in their head-to-heads. Go back and take a look at those games, and they played to an average of 39.6. They're trying to project this week that all of a sudden there's going to be an 11-point shift in the game flows between these two. It's an interesting take. Teddy, earlier in this week, post-mortem, Drew Brees and the Saints turned it over 4 times against Tampa Bay. Do you like the pride of Brees in a rematch to turn that around?
Well, Brees needs to show some pride after his performance last week because, again, New Orleans was a little bit flat and they're coming off a loss. So we can expect to see some focus from the Saints side of the equation here. The question is what Tampa Bay brings to the table, particularly offensively. You know, obviously going without Ernest Graham, who is their dump-off running back to throw pass to. He has 26 receptions this season. He's someone who Josh Freeman has really relied on so far this year. But Josh Freeman hasn't been very good. I mean, let's not sugarcoat it. Freeman was very impressive last year, his first full season as a starter. He's shown flashes this season, but the consistency hasn't been there. And by and large, Tampa's passing game has been, I'm not going to call it an exercise in futility, but I'm definitely going to call it a disappointment so far this season. If the Bucs are going to hang around in this game, and if this game has any chance to go over the number, Freeman's going to have a big day, and frankly, I'm not so sure he's going to do it against the Saints' blitzing defense.
Yeah, let's talk about a key part of that passing game that'll be missing, and one you might not necessarily think about, Ernest Graham. LeGarrette Blount is healthy again. He's a good first down back. He's a good second down back. But it's Graham that's that third down guy out of the backfield. 26 catches already this year. He's not going to be there. Blount, not nearly the same level receiver, not as good at blocking the blitzes. Tells us that Tampa Bay weakness might continue. You saw how badly they broke down against the Bears when he was out. So, Teddy, is that setting us up for something here?
It's setting us up for a drum roll, Dave. You got it in you? You got a little brrrr? No? Just completely stoic.
Take the free hot dogs from Teddy at the game tomorrow night, but don't emulate his percussion attempts. Don't do that.
No, when people are coming up to me now, they're going, money time, Teddy. That's the line that seems to have taken over. But money time NFL style, we're going to take this game, Bucks and the Saints, under the total, 50.5, the current number. Tampa Bay and New Orleans under is the Vegas Sports Day play of the day on Sunday. And that's going to wrap it up for the weekend preview edition. Thanks so much for watching, taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. Enjoy the games all weekend long. For Malinsky, I'm Savransky. Good luck. May the winners be yours.